I'll do whatever it takes. I'll take whatever action. If someone says to me, to get to this thing, you now need to do this, I would want to understand why, make sure that I understand it thoroughly, and then I'll put it into place with that understanding.
Meet your host, Andy Naylor. Andy is a men's physique transformation expert, competitive physical champion, and a multi-six-figure business owner who has helped thousands of busy, high-achieving men get into the best shape of their lives and reconnect with their inner alpha. On this show, Andy is going to share with you his playbook on feeling healthy again, avoiding the common pitfalls successful men fall into, dropping 20 to 30 pounds of fat, and building a physique you can finally be proud of. And the transformations aren't just physical either. You're going to learn how meeting your personal goals will help support your professional achievements, giving you that true alpha mentality. Let's go.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Andy Naylor, founder and CEO of Naylor Body Design and host of Your Optimal Alpha podcast. But you knew that already. Welcome back to the show. Let's go. So we have one of our most requested episodes back today, which is a Q&A. These Q&As are actual live questions that our clients have asked in their check-ins. They've already been answered. And what my team do is collate a random number of those. So 12 questions to go through today, and I will try and answer them. It's not necessarily, I only have so much context when I answer these, because I don't know the history. My team just literally give me the question, which is fun, because of course I have very little to go on, which kind of makes it challenging for me, maybe interesting to listen to. So these questions have been answered. My answers may differ from that of the coaches. Doesn't mean the coaches was wrong or mine's wrong or anyone's right. There are always different viewpoints. And I think that's possibly why these episodes are so interesting, because rather than the answer, I think most of the time I try to give perspective and viewpoint onto how I might come to an answer. Therefore, maybe sometimes the answer might be irrelevant. It's more the thought process behind it. Anyway, enough waffle. Question number one. If I eat on a caloric deficit and I don't eat 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, will I still be able to lose body fat? What are the pros and cons? Yes. 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight really is nothing to do with the actual caloric deficit and the losing of fat. The issue that you would probably come into is if you don't have adequate protein while in a deficit, there is high likelihood that not only will you lose fat, but you'll catabolize muscle, because muscle is more calorically expensive than fat. It takes your body a lot more energy to maintain muscle mass than fat. And also, if you're not resistance training, then again, you're not sending a signal to the body while in a caloric deficit that this muscle is still needed. Yeah, if you stop resistance training, really doesn't matter how much protein you're having, you're going to lose muscle at that point over time, because there's no stimulus and signal to the body to say that we still need this muscle. Please do your best not to lose it. So you can be in a caloric deficit and not eating 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. And yes, you will still lose fat, but there's a higher likelihood that you'll also lose muscle. Probably not the ideal outcome. So get that 1 gram of protein per pound in. And that's just a guideline. There's also, it just works out to be a really good guideline. Some people need a bit more protein. Some people need a little bit less. I think 1 gram covers all bases pretty well. Number two, progressive overload. What is it? Why do I need to add more weight? Can I not just do more workout and keep the weight the same? Okay, there's technically a really good point in that, but let's unpack this a little bit. Progressive overload is just a fancy term for doing more than you've done before. That's it. If we were running, it would be run the same distance faster or run the same speed but get further. It's just do a little bit more. So in terms of resistance training, there's a number of things that we could progressively means we don't just overload it once, we're doing it again and again. We're doing something with a view, we are trying to do it over again, over again, over again. So we could progressively overload the number of reps. So we could do exactly the same weight, putting aside execution, putting aside how we've set the week up in terms of training, push, pull, legs, upper, lower, full body, shoving all that to one side. The actual choices of exercise, right? Jump all that to one side. Let's just look at what things we could progress if the rest of it is standardized. So first of all, yes, we could progress weight. we could progress volume in terms of the number of sets completed, the number of reps completed. We could also progressively overload in, say, reduce rest times. It's not, that's not quite the same, but it is a progressive overload. Well, but there's an end game to that, because you can't do all of your workouts with zero rest in the middle. That would kind of be a bit weird. So generally speaking, we can't progress all of those at once. We can probably for a while, if someone is new to training, they can just probably add more weight, do more sets and more reps all at once. For me, 22 years into training, for me to add more weight to something, something that I've been doing for a while, it takes quite a lot. One, because I'm 45 and the goal of adding 10 pounds more muscle is not the biggest goal. The goal, outside of having insane amounts of daily energy, running my business and being successful in terms of those things, in terms of physique goals, I'd just like to be able to train uninjured for the rest of my life and look pretty damn bloody good while doing it and perform well, which means just slapping on loads of extra weight, there's going to come a point where that's going to cause injury, breakdown of form and execution before that. So then we've got these other two metrics that are probably easier to play with, which is sets and reps. Now, the reps is the easiest one because it's the smallest increment. Technically, I'd say it's the smallest increment of progress you can make. But because it's the smallest doesn't mean it's not the most effective. I would say that it's probably the most effective. I get to a point where, legit, if I can get on some movements, if I can get an additional perfect half a rep of progress, I take it quite happily. Because it'll get to the point where I could put more weight on and move it, yes, but probably to the detriment of form, which is now, I'm now doing a completely different exercise if form isn't standardized. But also the chances are if I went up a weight, I would probably drop down X number of reps because the weight has gone up. Therefore, I've probably done less overall work, i.e. volume, because I've done more weight but less reps. Sometimes a slightly lighter weight and more reps gives you slightly more volume, which is more work overall. So really, it's just a way of managing, tracking, measuring the ability for us or the desire for us to do just slightly more. If we are not doing more, if we're fairly new to training, our body will make progress to a point where it no longer needs to make progress to do that thing. Let's take it out of the gym and let's talk about walking. Most of the time, we don't progressively overload walking. What options would we have? Walk faster, walk further, walk up a hill, add weight to ourselves. That would be ways that we could progressively overload walking. But for the most part, we're just kind of using walking to get around our world. So we don't progressively overload it. It's just a form of transport to us for most of us, which makes sense. Our body doesn't need to adapt and change. There is no additional stimulus being put on the body to make it need to change for us to continue walking. So that's what non-progressive overload looks like. But if you want to progress your physique and get better, build more muscle, get leaner, stronger, fitter, healthier, faster, whatever, then you need to do just a bit more. Just a bit more, just a bit more. So why do you need to add more weight? Well, again, it depends on your goal. If your goal is to add muscle, then I'm not saying that you technically, it depends where you are, but you don't technically have to add weight. You could just add a set, add a set, add a set, add a set at the same weight. And I've done this particularly well with clients and myself, whereby I quite like, when I'm doing an exercise, I will generally use the same weight across all the sets. Most of the time. One, it's really easy to track progress. So I will warm up to a weight so I have a standard weight or a current standard weight for a particular exercise. For example, there is a Black Power incline plate loaded chest press that I use quite a lot. And I know that right now I can put 3 plates per side. Could I do more? Yeah, slightly. But right now, 3 plates per side. And the first set, I might do 4 sets and a back off. The back off being just take a plate off each side and try and get even more reps. So it's 2 rep zones. Don't worry about that for now. Let's just imagine I'm going to do 4 sets with the 3 plates on. It's really easy to track because I know the first set I might do 16, then it might be 14, then it might be 10, then it might be 8. So that's it. That's what I did this week, just for argument's sake. Well, if I go in next week and I still do my 4 sets with the same weight, I just need to beat that number of reps. And that is progressive overload. I've just done a little bit more. There you go. Hope that helps. Number three, I'm on a weight plateau and a friend of mine told me I should increase my calories. This doesn't make sense to me. What are your thoughts on that? I'm 5'6", 155. My calories are 1,000 at the minute. I'm guessing this is a female. So there's a few nuances here that I don't know. So I don't know how hard, well, I can see how hard you've been dieting by the 1,000 calories. I don't know what those are made up of. I don't know what expenditure is. I don't know how long the diet has been going on. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. However, there does come a point where, although by definition, we could say that this doesn't really happen, I still think it does when we see it in real world, which is there comes a point where the body just doesn't want to continue losing body fat. No matter how far down we push calories, the body seems to resist. Now, we could then turn around and go, well, technically, if you're not losing body fat, you're not in a caloric deficit. Because if you're in a caloric deficit, your body will lose body fat. So there's a weird sort of paradox going on here, because that is technically true. However, there seems to be more things at play. Sometimes, you know, sleep could be disrupted. Stress could be high. When someone also starts to diet really hard and they get really low, they start to fidget less, move less. The body starts to slow things down, metabolism being one of those, but it generally does it by removing non-exercise activities. So fidgeting, moving, all that kind of stuff. So in other words, it could be that those things coming down, so this sort of like involuntary movements, moving, you know, around, that comes down and starts to balance off the deficit that was there. And I think that's maybe what might be happening. So what's this idea of putting calories up? It's to reset things, I would say, essentially. We would really call this a diet break. Without going into the idea of you've got cheat days, refeeds, diet breaks, I'll forget about the other two for the moment. We're looking at a diet break. A diet break is simply go back up to the bottom edge of maintenance in terms of your calories. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm sure we all know that there is an amount of calories that we would eat in a day, given the amount of movement that we have, that would keep us at our body weight. So we call this maintenance, but it's not an exact number. It's not like 2,572 calories. So for me, it might be between, if I was sort of, you know, trying to maintain, it might be between 2,700 and 3,200. It could be anything, for example, between those numbers, because daily activity does shift around, sleep, stress. Our human body is not in a petri dish. It's not a closed system. It kind of intakes so much information and so many other things are acting upon it that I don't think it's an exact science. So in other words, I think that there is a band of maintenance. There is it starts here and it ends somewhere around here. Point being, if we go into a diet break, I would suggest trying to work out the bottom edge of that maintenance. Yeah. In other words, we're being a bit cautious. That's all I mean by that. So we would go up there and maybe hang out there for, say, well, depends how long. You know, if our goal is to continue getting leaner, back up for maybe a week, 10 days, body weight will go up slightly, but so many things will reset. Ghrelin, the hunger hormone, will reset. We'll also get, I think, a big stress reset. I think also sleep, most likely. The sort of inherent pressure psychologically and emotionally that builds up when we're dieting, that will reset a little bit. The hunger to want to actually diet and get leaner will start to come back. The desire to probably want to train will come back. All these things will just reset themselves slightly. And it's like reloading the gun or taking a breath in before then pushing back on with the diet process. Number four, what is the best app to track my food? Is it even worth it? Why do I need to track my calories? This macro tracking is OCD. Will I ever get to my goal? Oh, blimey, okay. Will I ever get to my goal? I'm losing half a pound per week and have 40 to go, but I don't feel I can do any more or eat any less. Female client. Okay. What's the best app to track your food? So I still use MyFitnessPal. There are many other apps out there. I still use MyFitnessPal. And I think the majority of our clients, I would say 80% use MyFitnessPal. There's Chronometer, there's a whole bunch of others, but I've never really used them as much. I still use MyFitnessPal. I mean, I think the free version's absolutely fantastic. Is it even worth it? Yeah, absolutely 100%. Why? If you do not know the calories, calories more than macros, for the most part, calories are king, macros are queen. Because you can have perfect macros, i.e. a perfect ratio, whatever that even actually is, but you could have whatever a perfect ratio of macros are, based on whatever you've picked, but be in a caloric surplus with the right ratio of macros. Well, that's going to completely stuff up the idea of losing 40 pounds. So calories are king. So if we're not tracking food, now, but point here is I track macros to end up at the result of calories because they're the same thing. They're not the same thing. But what I mean is if you just track calories, well, you then miss the macros. If you track the macros, you end up with the calories anyway, because macros feed into calories. Let's just say that there are three macros. We can argue there's more, but for the sake of today's conversation, let's say there's three: protein, fats, carbohydrates. All your foods fall into those categories, okay? Some people would say fiber falls into this separately. Some people would say that alcohol does. I do agree with that, but shoving that to one side, protein, carbs, fats. And a gram of each of those carries a certain amount of energy, calories. So if we're counting the macros, and I would suggest counting macros in grams, then we're automatically counting the calories off the back of that. So is it worth it? Yes. Why do I need to track my calories? Well, to make sure that you maintain stability through your day, you're accountable to the food that you're eating, and you maintain that caloric deficit. Macro tracking is OCD. I'm not going to argue against that. That's a personal choice. Let me give perspective. If losing 40 pounds is, I don't know who this client is. I'm just going to point that out. If losing 40 pounds is important enough to somebody, well, then you'll do whatever it takes to get there. That's how I go about things. If something is OCD to me, or I think that's a little over the top, well, then whatever the goal is I'm trying to get to just isn't all that to me. That's my viewpoint. I have a very particular personality type, and I'm very black and white when it comes to reaching a goal, implementation. I'll just do whatever it takes to get to where I need to get to, aside from hurting other humans, right? But whatever else it is, I'll do whatever it takes. I'll take whatever action. If someone says to me, to get to this thing, you now need to do this, I would want to understand why, make sure that I understand it thoroughly, and then I'll put it into place with that understanding. Macro tracking is not OCD. It's just probably new to you. And if something's new, it's probably a little overwhelming. But honestly, it's not overwhelming. In actual fact, I would say eventually, once you've tracked macros, it becomes the opposite to OCD. It gives you freedom. Tracking calories and tracking macros is not like being in a food prison. It's indeed the opposite, in my opinion, because most of us want to maintain a healthy, great physique, but we also want the freedom of eating the food that we want. Well, then therefore tracking the calories and the macros gives us the freedom to eat the foods that we want, but we have a limit and we understand where that limit is, but we can manage it because we're managing the numbers, and then we can maintain our amazing health and physique. So in actual fact, I would say macro tracking is the window to food freedom. Will I ever get to my goal? That's entirely up to you. Whoever you might be, it's entirely up to you. Every goal is achievable. Some goals are quicker, some goals take longer, but technically I'm losing half a pound a week. So it's going to take you 80 weeks to get there. 80 weeks. You could probably, I don't know, maybe you could speed things up and get to a pound a week. Then you've got 40 weeks. So yeah, okay, is that a long time? Well, depends, just slightly less than a year. But let's imagine you did a pound a week and you got there in 40 weeks and you had achieved your ultimate goal, and then you never, ever, ever had to come back and do this ever again. Would you take that as success? I would assume so. Because let's imagine you went off and started doing 2, 3, 4 pounds a week on some stupid fad diet. Maybe you get there in half the time, but you will put it back on again, or who anybody would put it back on again, most likely. In fact, very, very likely. So weirdly, when it comes to fat loss, really slow and steady wins the race, because the race isn't getting 40 pounds down for this particular person. I would suggest, and I'm sure I'd be right if I said the race is get 40 pounds down and never have to come and do this ever again, which is why we have the mantra in our business, which is to be the last coaching company somebody ever needs. Because we view things on, let's get this done once, let's get it done right. Cool. Hope that helps. Alphas. I interrupt this show with a simple message. This show is here to benefit you and your progression to the best version of yourself. But not only just you, it's also here to benefit the people around you, your loved ones, your friends, other alphas in your vicinity. So why not do a really cool thing today? Something that I would thank you for, and maybe someone else would. Share this podcast with at least one other alpha out there who you know would benefit from it. Why not share the information, share the ability for someone else to grow? I'm sure they would thank you. I 100% would absolutely thank you. This podcast only grows by our listeners, our followers doing amazing things like giving us 5-star reviews, downloading podcasts, subscribing, and then of course sharing it with other people. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Share it with one person, and of course drop us a 5-star review, download the podcast, and of course subscribe. And now back to the show. Number 6, how can I improve nutrition accuracy when traveling and eating at events? Great question. Take your own food with you. That's the first answer. Take your own food with you. Get yourself a proper bag with Tupperware and whatever you might need to be able to carry food around with you, and suck it up, princess. Prep your own food, take it with you. That's it. Outside of that, the next thing that you would do is you would pick food that you know exactly what it is. Now, let's imagine, you said eating at events. That could be restaurants, it could be buffets. I don't know what that is. But you pick food where you can, you know what it is. Let's imagine it's a restaurant. Let's imagine you walk into a restaurant and you order a steak, for example. Well, you order a steak by its weight. For example, I have a steak about once a week. I would have it more. Nothing wrong with red meat, just off on a tangent. I have a steak and it's 250 grams. So I know that I'm getting 250 grams of steak. Now, I order that with a side salad with no dressing. So I just don't bloody well count the salad because it's just leaves and tomato. You get the point. It's 250 grams of steak. So I know that that's basically just protein because it's a fillet. So there's basically barely any fat content in there. So it's just basically 250 grams of protein. Now, so in other words, what I'm saying is I can see the food. I know exactly what's there. Let's imagine I went and ordered a curry. As amazing as curries are, I haven't got a clue what's in it. I don't know the content of, I don't know if there's sugar in there. I don't know if there's what fat level's in there. I don't know what's in it. It will taste bloody amazing, but I don't know what's in it. Can't track it. So while I'm away, or if staying adherent to a food plan and the accuracy of that and making progress is important, pick simple, basic foods where you know exactly what it is and you can track it in MyFitnessPal. Number seven, if I have a busy week and have the choice between either seven, if I have a busy week and have the choice between either 7 hours sleeping or working out, but not both, which is best? Yeah, that I really can't answer. There's more to this one because I don't know what the goal is. I don't know if the goal is adding muscle. I don't know if the goal is getting leaner. So I don't know if it's in a deficit or a surplus, because that makes a difference. Because the stress of being in, either end of both of those makes a difference. I don't think I can answer this and really give any good context that's useful. Because if I have a busy week and have the choice, is that every day of the week? So is that like, that, would that mean you're missing a whole week of training? Then I don't think that's good in any way. I mean, 7 hours is great. Like I get like 5.5 to 6. Now it depends. I don't know how many hours of sleep you regularly need to be able to perform in your day. Yeah, this question I would need more context to answer and really do a good job of answering it rather than me just sitting here and basically waffling. So I'll pass that one. Eight. I used to do cardio between sets of weights, like jumping jacks or burpees. Is this okay rather than resting? I'll just say no. I've seen people do this and I'm just like, what a waste of energy. It's probably a really good way to get injured. Because if I just did legs today, maybe this is a bad example. Like between doing, you know, sets of 15 to 20 repetitions of a swing leg press, I can barely work out if I'm still a human or not. I'm not going to go and start doing burpees. I would say, okay, here's my answer. If you've got the real energy to do a whole bunch of stuff between sets of resistance training, you ain't training anywhere near hard enough. Sorry, that's going to hurt, isn't it? But the goal of lifting weights is to probably make progress in terms of retention of or building of muscle. Well, if you're then training hard enough, you should be using your 30, 45, 60, 90 seconds of rest to recover so that your next set is optimal. So my thought process is the moment you start doing other sort of random things between sets, neither of those things are then optimal. It's probably a big waste of time. Number nine, IF and weightlifting for muscle gains. Are intermittent fasting and weightlifting for muscle gains compatible strategies? Yeah, I technically intermittent fast. Like intermittent fasting is a massive buzzword right now. Whoever this might be, don't overthink it. It just means having a window of eating. It's becoming, sadly, I think because I'm seeing it happen so often, again, one of those things that people think intermittent fasting is some sort of magic strategy. It's just an eating window. It's just an easy way to control caloric intake because you've got a window. So it puts a mental fence around the amount of the time that we can eat food, so therefore the amount of food that we can eat. I don't normally eat my first meal until about 10/11. I probably eat my last meal about 7. Well, that's kind of fasting, right? That is intermittent fasting to a degree. Now, you might say, well, you can't eat until the PM of the day. Well, that's bullshit. There's no laws to this thing. It's just what window do you want to eat inside. So my only thing here would be is, can you still get enough protein in the window that you've left yourself? So for me, if I start eating at 12, it means I'm only going to get in about 3 meals, maybe a shake. My digestion just can't get in, you know, the sort of 220-ish grams of protein that I would eat in a day and digest it. I have to start a little bit earlier. Yes, they're compatible strategies. If building muscle is the goal, I wouldn't say it's the optimal strategy. No. Because the overall goal when building muscle is caloric intake is going to progressively go up. You're going to progressively overload your training, but you're also going to progress your food at the same time. Well, if you've limited yourself to a window, you know, it's like trying to have a fight with one of your arms tied behind your back. You just made it a bit more difficult for the sake of it. It'll be fine up until a point where you're like, I can't get enough food in the 4 hours of, you know, time that I've given myself to eat. Okay, well, just give yourself more time to eat. Building muscle's bloody hard as it is. Don't make it any more harder. Number 10, any tips for fitting in more steps on work days? Get up earlier, walk before work, go to bed earlier, get up earlier. Yeah, take the stairs. If you work in an office with a car park, park as far away in the parking lot as you possibly can, so you have to walk further. Don't walk to the nearest toilets in the wherever you are in terms of where you work. Go to the furthest toilets that you can and walk back. It's little silly things like that. It's making a point of going the long way round something as a journey. Really, it's get up earlier, get outside, get fresh air, sunlight, get in like 5,000 steps in 20 minutes. That's half your day done. Then the other 5,000, whatever your goal is, you'll probably get it picked off in the day by just thinking, how do I go the longest way to get to this place? That'll probably help. Number 11, explain ideas on having flexible training times, i.e. when I've had a bad night, I can't train in the morning, so I train in late afternoons. Should my meals and supplements stay the same? So ignore supplements, because that could mean absolutely anything. If you're thinking about things like pre-workout or pump-based products, well, then yeah, you'd have it before you train. Creatine, glutamine, stuff like that just doesn't really need to change, although I just have it in my intra-workout drink anyway, so it just follows that. Does food need to change? Right, so it depends, you know, most likely yes, because an optimal goal for food timing is to have as much carbohydrates as close to the training window as possible and kind of just dump fats away from that, just for many reasons, but I won't bore you with that today. So yeah, you know, let's say you got up in the morning, trained, you know, had a load of carbs while you're training and then a post-workout carby type meal. Well, let's imagine you've had a bad night's sleep and you're not going to train in the morning. I would then have just a fat and protein meal first thing in the morning, and then maybe another, I don't know, protein salad-y type meal, or maybe a carb meal if then the next thing you're going to do is train. But basically what you're doing is you're moving your carbs are tracking your training window. That's really the first and main thing that you would want to do with your food. Generally speaking, when we plan food, there's all depends on the timing, but there's always a post-workout meal, a pre-workout meal, an intra meal, and a post-workout meal, and they would all contain carbohydrates. Sometimes if someone's on a lot of carbohydrates, we would then call it a post-post-workout meal. In other words, just the two meals after training. Basically, that would be the most carbs. The meals further out in either direction, either before or after training, would then be the more fat. And, you know, if there's any fats in the diet, it would be fat and protein based. So you would just now have those meals tracking up and down the day, depending on where you are training time-wise. Number 12, my left knee has no cartilage. Should I skip leg days? Crikey. Well, sorry to hear that. I would defer to a local professional, MRI scans and all that kind of stuff, because I certainly wouldn't want to give you advice on that, because I don't know if you're in pain. I don't know if it happened by accident. There's a whole bunch of stuff there. I really don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to be careful not to give you the wrong advice here. I would say you need things like MRI scans, look at soft tissue and stuff like that. Is there damage? You know, how old are you? You know, is there other issues in terms of joint-based stuff? Are you in pain right now? How long has this been for? I certainly wouldn't say you need to skip leg day, but my goodness, you need to be very mindful in what you do and the choices of exercise and the volume and the intensity. You need to be mindful of all of those things, because I'm imagining that walking is probably fairly important to you. And what you wouldn't want to do is go gung-ho on leg day and then walking hurt. You know, walking is going to be most important. You know, leg day or walking, I'll take walking eventually. I'm not going to answer that because there's too many unknowns there, and it's more of a question that you probably need to seek local advice. You know, someone who can actually see what's going on inside your knee. So I don't know if you're on meds. I don't know if you're on painkillers or anything at the moment. Yeah, I'm gonna skip that one, I'm afraid. I refer you back to someone local who can, you know, I guess, get hands on and give you some advice. What we can do is, when we've seen things like MRIs, and I am not qualified to look at MRIs, I can be led, or my coaching team can be led by professionals who can look at those things. But we then know how to pick exercises, volume, intensity, those kind of things based off the back of that information. We can certainly help you there. But I'm guessing, given that I've had these questions after your coach's already had them, that's already happening. So there we go, ladies and gentlemen, another Q&A. I think we're bang on the half an hour mark, maybe just over. So I appreciate you being here. If you've enjoyed this content, well, first of all, I thank you, because I make it for you. Maybe you know someone out there who would benefit from this kind of content, someone who is a busy professional looking to optimize all areas of their life, training, nutrition, rest, recovery, sleep. All these things are important, and it can be a bit of a minefield. And all we try and do here is, you know, provide easy access to easily digestible and actionable information. So if you've enjoyed this, thank you very much. However you found this podcast, maybe pay that forward to someone else. Did you see a review? Did someone mention it? Send it out there to someone else that might benefit from it. And of course, if you haven't, why not leave us a 5-star review? Let us know how you enjoy the content, and let me know if there's any other specific things that you would like me to cover, because getting good ideas from you guys out there of what you want to hear is really, well, useful for me, because it makes picking content and subjects to talk about really easy. And also then it allows me to be very passionate about that content, because I already know that you guys want to hear it. So be sure to do that. Any of the socials where you can find me, you can do that. And of course, you can do it actually under the podcast in YouTube. And by the way, if you're listening to this podcast on a podcast streaming service, why not go to YouTube and watch it? We actually have more people watch it there, and you get to see my pretty face. Anyway, for now, over now, as you were.
Thanks so much for listening to today's show. We hope that you feel motivated to start making changes in your life so you can see those results that you've been wanting to achieve. Remember, you can do anything you set your mind to. If you love the show, please leave us a 5-star review and make sure you tell your friends. If you'd like to connect with Andy, you can find him on Instagram at Andy_Naylor_Pure_Elite_Pro. I'll leave a link in the show notes as well. Talk to you again soon.